One of my lifelong heroes, a 20-year congressman, worked with Ronald Reagan to fight abortion at a federal level. This is Congressman Bob Dornan. Bob, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Reverend Bob Enyart, for the rest of my life, I'm indebted to you. I got your documentary, Focus on the Strategy, that you gave me seven simple words that I will never look at another piece of pro-life legislation without saying those words.
But what are those seven words?
And then you can kill the baby.
It's a bad law if it says, and then you could kill the baby.
And then you can kill the baby. If you do this, that real notification, your documentary, everybody in America who wants to be part of a good fight, they must get that documentary on the strategy.
Thank you, Bob Dornan. That was Bob Dornan, U.S. Congressman, fought for life for many years. We appreciate him and are thrilled with his endorsement for our video, Focus on the Strategy. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and I would like to welcome to the studio the vice president of Colorado Right to Life, Leslie Hanks. Leslie, thanks for bringing up this topic and this upcoming interview.
Oh, my pleasure. What an honor.
Yeah, well, a really good book has been published, and why don't you tell us about the book, and then we'll get the author on here in just a moment.
Well, it's called Personhood, A Pragmatic Guide to Pro-Life Victory in the 21st Century and the Return to First Principles in Politics.
Whoa.
It's a little bit of a long title, but...
Well, that's the subtitle, and it's a great subtitle because Personhood is the title of the book.
Right.
But I love the two elements in Dan Becker's subtitle, A Pragmatic Guide to Pro-Life Victory, because pragmatics, that's what works.
That's right.
And what we've been doing for 30 years hasn't worked. And a return to first principles. That is just so great.
In politics. And just before we have Dan on, I'll tell you why it's so important for us to return to first principles, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you don't know already, but...
Well, we talk about this almost every day for 20 years on the air.
Right.
But sure, go ahead.
Well, here in Denver, we've got a mayoral election coming up, a runoff, as a matter of fact, with... Roy Romer's son, Chris Romer, and a gentleman
former
named,
governor's son.
Right. And then Michael Hancock. And it's just so sad to see how it's degenerated to the point of being who is the most pro-abortion. That's the big separation
who's the
point
most
pro-abortion, in the campaign.
And that was like Massachusetts governor's race, where if you recall, Mitt Romney is on video all over the internet insisting that he is the most pro-abortion of all the candidates and promising to uphold the right to kill children. And he continued that even after his phony pro-life conversion.
And
so,
sadly,
real interesting.
Michael Hancock is an African-American candidate, and he's not been made aware of blackgenocide.org and doesn't understand how 1,400 black babies are killed every day in America.
Mm-hmm.
So first principles, it's a notion we should really explore.
All right, well, we've got Dan Becker on the line. All right, what an honor to welcome the president of Georgia Right to Life to Bob Enyart Live. Dan, you're on with Bob Enyart and Leslie Hanks.
It's my pleasure and privilege as well.
Well, thank you for joining us. And the book, Leslie has been reading the book. I've been given this as a gift, and I'm so thrilled. I've started to read it, Dan. It's very exciting. When did it come out?
Came out March the 1st. It's been out for a few weeks, and more copies have sold in Washington, D.C. than any other region of the country.
Well,
that's exciting.
That is exciting. And can we start with something in your book that the book is a sweeping look at pro-life strategy and what has not worked. In fact, you contrast divine law, God's law, with natural law, and you make a powerful argument for why we need to follow God's law. But can we start with a detail that you've included from AD 365? This is about 1,600 years ago. Do you recall that part of the book where you talk about Basil of Caesarea?
Basil of Caesarea was a pastor who was assigned a city in Asia Minor. He came into Caesarea. He evaluated the city and found it to be full of pagan elements.
Mm-hmm.
And as the only church in that city and only pastor, the first thing he ran up against was a guild of abortionists.
Mm.
And as he noted, they were involved in selling fetal parts to the cosmologists that were located in Egypt.
This is just this is shocking, because we're 1,600 years later and the same atrocities have been happening. So they were selling baby parts, harvesting the parts of aborted children way back in 365 AD?
And they were, and in fact turning them into women's cosmetics. So some things never change. And of course, we believe that the evil of abortion is driven demonically. And of course, demons never die. They just demand the same things over and over again.
Mm.
And so, quite frankly, Basil put together a plan, ran the abortionists out of town with the help of solid pro-life preaching, biblical truth being spoken to the situation in the culture, and it ended in the first hospitals, the first orphanages, and a whole host of things, including an abortion-free culture.
Mm. You know, back in... Well, back even before Christ, the Hippocratic Oath, we have on American Right to Life's website, we have an article about the Hippocratic Oath. And, of course, it stated that I will not perform an act of euthanasia on a patient. I will not provide an abortion. And I will not have a sexually immoral relationship with a patient. And modern oaths, where they are given in medical schools, when med students graduate, they have eliminated all the teeth of the Hippocratic Oath. They've removed it. Leslie, you're very familiar with that.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. Mm. Most of the medical schools have either just completely watered it down to they might as well not even pretend like they're taking it. But
right. And there are recent surveys showing that it doesn't mean much to doctors anymore, the oath. And there's a story out just in the last few weeks, Dan, comparing this horror from 365 AD to today, where Pepsi, for example, is one of the companies that has been using a researcher that they take fetal kidney cells and they try different drink flavors and they put them on these fetal kidney cells. Actually, they have used them as stem cells to develop taste receptors. And they're tasting different drink flavors with aborted babies' parts.
Dan goes on to say, after the paragraph on what was going on in 365, currently a Swiss company, it's Neocutis, is that not right, Dan? That's using fetal cells for healing burn injuries, I believe. And then I believe they also just use it for beauty enhancement creams as well. So that's, you know, that's been going on contemporaneously for quite some time.
Dan?
I think we might have lost Dan, to tell you the truth.
We did. No wonder Dan's been so quiet. Let's try to get Dan back. We lost Dan. Dan Becker is the president of Georgia Right to Life. And Leslie, I would say Georgia Right to Life is one of the three largest affiliates of National Right to Life. But the personhood movement is extremely strong, of course, in Colorado. And in Georgia, it's strong. And so Georgia Right to Life is one of the strongest, I believe, affiliates of National Right to Life. And that's exciting. So, Dan, we have you back.
Sorry about that, Bob. Listen, we were very excited about the November elections. I mean, when Georgia voters went to the polls, they selected, of all nine statewide candidates, offices that were up for election, all nine of them are pro-personhood, pro-life, and without exceptions.
Wow.
No other state in the nation can make that claim.
Now, that is extraordinary. And Georgia Right to Life made this change in their direction some time ago, right, Dan? And you guys were told that this would be a political failure to advocate to support only no-exception pro-life candidates?
10 years ago, we made that decision to change our endorsement criteria and to raise the bar on what it meant to be pro-life in a state government. And as a result, we were promised that we would set back the movement, that we'd be alienated. A whole host of prophecies, that some of which came true, but the one that didn't is that we would set back the movement. We have added year on year to our political gains. In this last election cycle, 92% of our endorsed candidates, and we endorse in the hundreds, not in the tens and 15s like Planned Parenthood.
So you guys had 92% of your endorsed candidates win, and your criteria is they must be pro-life, advocate the right to life of the unborn child without the typical exceptions for rape and incest.
And they must be pro-personhood and affirm the personhood principle.
Wow. That is so thrilling.
That's
now,
awesome.
Here in Colorado, we can't say we've done quite that well, Leslie, but we had a very high percentage also of our pro-personhood candidates win their elections. And, Dan, while in Colorado we had a surge in Democratic voters in 2010, I don't know if you – do you know that about our state? Nationwide, the surge was with Republican voters. In Colorado, Democrats came out, I think it was 6 percentage points in greater numbers than they had for Obama in 2008.
I actually note that in the book. You in Colorado are where we were 10 years ago. Georgia was the most liberal southern state, lagging behind the rest of the southern states in conservative leadership. And once we began a aggressive campaign to uphold the biblical standard, pro-life standard, we began seeing change from that day forward.
Well,
in fact, the appendix of the book documents 10 years of gain on gain on gain, moving from victory to victory.
Well, and even here in Colorado, where we have a very liberal state electing pro-abortion governors, senators, Barack Obama, still we improved from 2008, where we were defeated with our personhood amendment, Amendment 48. We lost by a 3-1 margin, and that's quite a trouncing, and we realize that. But 2 years later, with a more hostile electorate, we narrowed the difference to a 2-1 margin. So that was quite a significant change. And what that means is that the personhood campaign educated people. Leslie was one of the sponsors.
Well, and
that
I think
one of the highlights of the personhood strategy is by returning to our first principles, which, by the way, personhood has been the objective of the pro-life movement since its inception. And so by returning to that, we educate the public, because when a politician is endorsed and holds to a pro-personhood position, he's attacked on the campaign trail by the media and by the candidate forum moderators, and he defends himself, and that educates the public.
I think the problem in Colorado is our politicians were relatively bold in the primary season, and then as they did begin to suffer the slings and arrows of the people asking the tough questions, there was a lot of backpedaling that went on, and that was unfortunate.
Yeah, that happened with our Republican candidates. In fact, Dan, we had candidates that they came across in the primaries as the pro-life heroes of the universe. They even put it in writing. They would help lead the state personhood campaign. Everything right. They would not vote to confirm a pro-abortion judge and so on. And during the campaign, actually, we had like our Senate candidate renege on every promise he had made. He verbally reneged and said, "I'm not supporting the personhood amendment. I will confirm judges who are pro-abortion." He went right down the list. So we withdrew our endorsement here at Bob and Yurt Live. Leslie, I believe you did also at Colorado Right to Life.
Correct.
And so we're going to hold these politicians' feet to the fire, where if they betray the innocent, they're not going to get the support of pro-lifers who know what they're doing.
That's right. That's right. Politicians don't do what you expect. They do what you inspect by requiring a higher standard and holding them to it. In the Georgia primary, gubernatorial primary, the personhood issue was the wedge issue between the two candidates in the runoff. And then in the general election, it became the issue as well. So here in the state of Georgia, we are seeing strong pro-personhood movement at the grassroots political level. Mm-hmm. Now, that's translated into votes because in July of last year, we became the first state in the nation to actually win a personhood ballot question. And 75% of all of our Republicans voted in favor of it, and 72% of our Democrats.
Whoa. Now, could you explain that a little bit more? This was...
That was at a county level, I think,
right? So this
was,
these were resolutions in counties across the state?
It was a non-binding straw poll, but it was a political question of the constitutional amendment question that would appear on the ballot if mm-hmm. we had a constitutional amendment approved, mm-hmm. that the voter would be faced with the exact same question. So for many voters, they didn't know that this was non-binding.
Right, sure.
And in 75% of the Republican cases and 72% of the Democrats,
wow.
the voters affirmed that life should be protected by law from its earliest biological beginning.
Wow. In Mississippi also, the polls are showing a tremendous opportunity to pass personhood in Mississippi. This year, they're on the statewide ballot for 2011 in November. And I don't know what it is about the North versus the South, Dan, but I think if there's a direction to be headed for going to hell, it must be to the North. Our states are going to hell in a handbasket, and the handbasket is up somewhere at the Arctic Circle.
Well, I will agree with you that Mississippi, all eyes are on Mississippi, because in November of this year, they most likely will become the first state in the nation in history. Mm-hmm. to affirm the personhood of all human life from its mm-hmm. earliest beginnings to natural death.
Dan, one of the things I've enjoyed so much about how far I've gotten into the book so far is that you do a nice job of going over the history of this ongoing struggle in Western civilization, from Indians being denied their personhood, from women being told they weren't persons. We obviously look back to African Americans being told that and to the Holocaust.
Yeah, Dan, you even point out in the Constitution, Article 1, Section 2, counted most blacks as 3/5 of a person. And, of course, that's just a devastating and a tragic part of our history. And people who know right from wrong and who love their neighbor will fight this kind of injustice.
Yeah, hopefully so. I do think this whole movement is beginning to reawaken in many hearts and minds how this injustice and the historical past has proved devastating. And we just need to remind ourselves that the Holocaust, I mean, it's just so easy to just put it out of our hearts and minds and pretend like it's not going on. Mm. But women rose to the occasion and fought for justice for their rights and to establish that they were persons. And we just have
and
to
Christians
continue.
Christians fought for the freedom for blacks, for slavery to be abolished. And those Christians won, even though the entire political structure in America, Dan, I've been reading about the time of the abolition fight in America and in England, and it was the ones who were fighting for biblical justice for blacks, they're the ones who got their way. Everyone else was advocating some kind of compromised position, like offer blacks money to send them back to Africa. That was maybe the most popular alternative. And it was the Christians who demanded abolition and then equal rights who finally got their way.
I think you're touching on a point here. There is a problem in the pro-life strategy of the last 37 years, and that is that they're attempting to get government to define personhood when we believe that it's an inalienable or unalienable right
sure.
from our Creator.
Exactly.
And that it must be recognized. Government must recognize the personhood.
What a beautiful point. What a beautiful point. We're not trying to establish personhood. The Creator did that when He made us.
Well, look at what nations have done when they've attempted to define who is and who is not a person. Hmm. Some class gets left off the list mm-hmm. and genocide follows.
In Europe, there are countries that are putting apes as people. They're giving apes the rights of persons, and they're denying those rights to the elderly, the infirmed, and to children.
That's correct.
So it is perverse. You talk about two maps, divine law and natural law, and you ask which of these will lead to victory in the 21st century for the pro-life movement. And I love what you do here, Dan. A lot of conservatives, I think, get drawn into this idea that natural law is the answer. And on the air for 20 years, I've been warning people that natural law is not the answer. Give us your understanding of why you advocate that we not be ashamed of divine law.
The Word of God is the foundation for our values from a Judeo-Christian Western cultural standing. That's undeniable. But we become ashamed of our biblical roots, and we abandon the very strength of our argument. Human dignity has been defined through the centuries by the stories that we draw from in the Old and New Testament. If we are created in the image of God, then any attack against that image is an attack against God himself. And from that perspective, we believe that all human life bears that image and therefore should be protected and respected in law. Government should recognize that inherent worth. And, of course, throughout Western history, when it has, and there have been significant periods of Western history where it has been pro-life consistently and right across the board from a government perspective. It wasn't until the Renaissance when the neo-pagan natural law thought from Aristotle and others began being infiltrating our churches, our seminaries, and so forth, that we abandoned the basis for what we believe and what we hold as true and informed.
I think it comes right out of Paul's warning to not be ashamed of Jesus Christ or his word, because they talk about the law of nature, and they hold that up. And even some of our founding fathers, not all, but some, held that up as an ideal. Well, the law of nature is dog eat dog. The strong destroys the weak. And so it's not the law of nature, it's the law of God. And God said, do not murder, do not steal, do not bear false witness against your neighbor. And you don't get that from the evolution of one animal to another, and that the strong could kill the weak. You get it from the fact that we are made in God's image. That's why abortion is wrong, because it's a baby. It's always wrong to kill an innocent baby, because that baby is made in God's image. And Dan, as you point out constantly, it's not that we're trying to end abortion. We're trying to return the recognition of human dignity to all people.
That is correct. The sanctity of life, when restored to a culture, gives grace to that culture. When it's denied, it incurs blood guiltiness. And from a theological perspective, that's something that cannot be atoned for. So there will be an accounting. There will be a reckoning at some point of God's justice upon a nation that allows this type of activity to occur.
Dan, I like what you say here, where you're ending chapter 2, and you're talking about personhood is the path to victory, and you say natural law relies on human reason to form a moral consensus, while divine law establishes moral absolutes that brook no compromise. One has an appearance of wisdom, the other the power of God. And I just really think that we've been kind of stuck in in the other.
Human wisdom. And in fact, when, Dan, you point out that divine law, it works by binding the conscience of a man and a woman, and God then raises these men and women to be leaders, whereas if we're teaching our own troops things that are not true, then even if our side gets elevated to become the president, well, then they just nominate pro-abortion judges because they made promises that I will ignore abortion when I nominate judges. And so we get nowhere after 30 years.
Bob, one of the frustrating things is that the current pro-life leadership says, wait. Wait until the Supreme Court is aligned in our favor. Wait until we can control the Senate, who controls the appointments to the Supreme Court. We've already been there.
We've been there, we've already done that, got the
seen
shirt.
The stars align. That's right.
Right. Yeah.
And it's not produced what we've desired.
In fact, we've gone the wrong way. We've got a greater percentage of federal justices who are pro-choice. From what we can tell, it's about 100% of the federal judiciary, even though our Republican pro-life presidents have been nominating them.
That's
so,
correct.
So it hasn't worked, and the Supreme Court has never even apologized for its Dred Scott decision that blacks are property, and they've never acknowledged that that was an unjust and illegitimate ruling, and we've been waiting 150 years for that.
Well, I think it's wrong for the pro-life movement to focus solely on Roe.
Right.
We should be standing on the truth that we are endowed by our Creator with the inalienable right to life.
Yeah, exactly right. We have to increase the social tension so that eventually we steamroll over the Supreme Court, over the federal government, because it gets to a point where you can no longer keep blacks down because of the intolerance created by Christians. That's what we got to do about child killing. The same thing, and that's how it's going to end one day, not because we're going to get enough Republicans to nominate good judges. That's not how it's going to go. Dan, there's been a division among the strategists in the pro-life movement, especially over the last 5 years, over personhood. And you, as the president of one of the leading right-to-life groups in the country, Georgia Right to Life, you are emphatically pro-personhood. So how does that work in the circles that you move in? Do you get people criticizing you for taking your stand?
Well, I will say that first they ignore you, then they ridicule you, then they persecute you, and in the words of Gandhi, then you win.
Then you win.
That is certainly our testimony here in Georgia. We were ignored. We've been shouting into the wind about this for 10 years. The pragmatic portion of the title is that it works. Mm. It works. It is unbelievable, the power of truth in action.
The power of truth. Amen.
Yep. In a political realm.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you see and have the empirical data that I present in the book to evaluate, and there's no state this won't work in over time.
Mm.
And I believe we may have to start at the grassroots level and build organizations from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
But this has been the pro-life message from the beginning.
Have you noticed that there is movement among various leaders who have been opposed to personhood or neutral who are starting to support personhood? Have you noticed? Is that happening?
Don Wildman of the American Family Association.
Mm.
Tony Perkins of Family Research Council.
Big examples.
Morton Blackwell of the Leadership Training Institute has trained conservatives for decades,
wow,
has now embraced personhood.
This big examples. Big, big examples.
Sweeping the country right now. And
all
creating
over the,
a lot of,
all over the country. And Colorado was, got to take a little credit for Leslie Hanks here. Colorado was the first state to have a statewide ballot initiative on personhood since 1967. When
That's
this
correct.
All started. So there has been an explosion of a revival of the personhood movement to stop the killing of children. Dan Becker, thank you for being a part of that.
Beautiful book, Dan.
Thank you.
Thanks for writing it. The cover's gorgeous, and keep up the good fight.
Yeah.
Appreciate it. Thank
all
you.
Right. Appreciate Dan Becker. And Leslie, thank you.
Thank you, Bob.
For arranging this interview, and what a great book. So, hey, everybody in the audience, God bless you guys. Please support Colorado Right to Life and go to kgov.com.
Would you like to study the Bible but don't really know where to start? Bob Inyart's seminar on hermeneutics, tools for studying the Bible, will help you to study and understand the Bible on a whole new level. Hermeneutics, tools for studying the Bible, is available by calling 1-800-8-INYART, or you can get the MP3 CD or the MP3 download at kgovstore.com. That's kgovstore.com.